right now. It's time for our Pacific chat. In lieu of Dateline Pacific, because the RNZ Pacific News team are focusing on their core business and they're all doing it from home, so it's quite difficult for them to do something for RNZ National when they've got to look after their own radio station. But they are very kindly joining us, one member of the team every night at this time when we normally broadcast Dateline Pacific. Tonight it's Johnny Blades. Kia ora, Johnny.
Kia ora, Brian.
Oh, you got a good line there, Johnny. Everything's obviously going well in your home office.
Yeah, better than the phone we used last time, I guess.
Yeah. Although the phone was fine, but this is sounding even more impressive. Johnny, let's get the COVID-19 stuff out of the way. Has there been much of an update on the situation in terms of how many people are infected that we know of in the Pacific Islands now?
Just a couple more, I think, since you last were updated. So there's 117 cases in the Pacific Islands region as of today, but there's been a second death in Guam, in the U.S. affiliated territory of Guam. They have edging on 60 cases there, and I think, as Jamie Tahana mentioned last night, that's a big concern up there. But yeah, 117 cases, and certainly those territories with a big European profile intersection are the ones with the most cases. So French Polynesia, New Caledonia, and Guam in particular.
Last time we had you on, Johnny, you talked about Papua New Guinea trying to get test kits in so they could test more people there. Have those test kits arrived? Are they still waiting?
Some have arrived. They're awaiting more. It's still very much, the need that they are. They're waiting on that, and they just need a whole lot of stuff, really. Protective equipment as well. That's another one. I think the nurses at the main hospital in Port Moresby, Papua New Guinea's capital, are threatening to go on strike or protest because they're worried that they aren't going to have the protective equipment that they would probably need if they're going to be treating COVID cases. Although the government says that they will be sort of deferring to the WHO when there's a surge of cases, in terms of the WHO will be manning or running a facility or two on the outskirts of the city where the cases would go, and that these cases wouldn't necessarily go into the PNG health system itself. But that, there's no doubt some of the health workers will need to be involved. But yes, so protective equipment and training as well. The nurses want training because, they're worried that this is a situation they've never been in before, like so many people and health workers around the world.
Officially, there's one case of COVID-19 in Papua New Guinea?
Still one case. Mm. And, one suspects that's just a, reflection of the fact that the testing hasn't really been ramped up yet. So,
because across the border in West Papua, there's been a death now, hasn't there?
Yeah, that's right. On the western side of New Guinea, and that's the Indonesian territory, there's been one death in Sorong, and that's the westernmost city of New Guinea. But around about a dozen confirmed cases across those two Papuan provinces, which for many people listening, they might know it as West Papua. In fact, it's two provinces, West Papua and Papua. It's a bit confusing, I'm sorry. But yeah, so 12 cases. And certainly one of those provinces, Papua, they have stepped up measures to, protect the borders and keep people at home. And that seems to be quite successful. The streets of the cities and towns are quite quiet, I understand. That is a big fear with the proximity to Papua New Guinea. There's that border, their land border is about 750 kilometres long, down the 141st meridian east. And that's so porous that people can really just slip back and forth without being caught quite easily. There's one official access point way up the north, I think we discussed this last time, where people are supposed to formally come in, and that's been shut for 2 months. But the Indonesian security forces have deployed some extra troops and sort of border officials out there to try and stem the flow. But certainly from what we hear in PNG, people are still slipping across. So that's a concern,
I heard an item on the news earlier today about a New Zealander dying in West Papua at the office of a mining company. Johnny, I'm guessing you might have written that story.
Yeah, it's very sad news. A New Zealand man, Graham Thomas Wall, a 57-year-old, was an employee of the mining multinational Freeport, or particularly PT Freeport Indonesia. Freeport runs the massive, lucrative mining operations up at Grasberg in the sort of highlands of Papua province. And there was a shooting incident yesterday in Temeke, which is a nearby town, a town near to the mine. Graham Wall and a couple of other Freeport employees were shot. He died, and the other two seriously injured, been taken to hospital, and the police are blaming the West Papua Liberation Army. That's a pro-independence guerrilla fighting force which has years ago declared war on the Indonesian state, but in the last couple of years its attacks against symbols of the Indonesian state, or particularly the security forces, or you know, Indonesian projects such as the big Trans Papua highway project, these attacks have really ramped up, escalated to a level not seen for, I guess, decades in Papua. They haven't outright claimed responsibility for this, but the police over in Papua are saying this is their handiwork.
Well, given you've spent a bit of time in West Papua and you've followed the region very closely, Johnny, how plausible do you think the police are in this particular case?
Well, I mean, lately, just this month in March, the West Papua Liberation Army's local faction has carried out some deadly attacks on police and military in this very regency called Temeke. Temeke is the capital of Temeke, and Temeke is the regency or sort of district in which the Freeport mine is in. So a policeman and a soldier had been shot dead earlier in the month and a number of them injured. And as well, I think the Indonesian military had shot four of the Liberation Army fighters dead. So things have been happening. There have been about three different sort of skirmishes or attacks earlier in the month. So it looks like this could be another of the Liberation Army's attacks, because the army has, through its spokesman, said it would be targeting Freeport. But, you know, the non-military arm of the independence movement, that's the United Liberation Movement for West Papua, led by Benny Wender, who is based in Oxford in the UK, has cautioned that this shouldn't be blamed on the Liberation Army because, as he's pointed out, there is this long history of the Indonesian military being involved in some of the killings over the years and shootings and attacks on Freeport-related infrastructure or people. Up to about 2 years ago, there'd been about 50 people shot dead in a series of shootings on the main road from Temeke up to the mine. 50 people killed in, about a 17-year stretch. So that you have these sporadic but not uncommon attacks. And the theory is because sometimes military weapons or military people have been found to have been involved in them, it can't always be, you know, pinned on the liberation movement fighters or West Papuans, because it seems as if some Indonesian military personnel may be trying to justify their presence, because when you've got the contract for looking after Freeport's security up there, it's a very lucrative job. And in fact, there's been turf wars between the police and the military over the years as well.
Really? About who gets to protect the mine?
Absolutely. In the early 2000s, there was a high-profile case where two American teachers who were connected to the mine staff. It's a huge mine. It was the world's biggest mine for a while.
What does Freeport mine there?
It's gold and,
right,
and copper.
Which right now, well, gold price has gone through the roof. I don't know what copper's doing at the moment.
Yeah, I haven't checked for a while actually, Brian, but it's, you know, this mine was the largest source of revenue for the Indonesian state for a long time. And recently, actually, Freeport, which the parent company is an American company, Freeport-McMoRan, it recently divested 51% to the Indonesian state because the Indonesian parliamentarians have been complaining for a long time that they should really, sorry, the country should really have more of a share of it, which is what has happened. In fact, the Papuans, really, who probably have more of an argument that they haven't had a fair share of the benefits of it, really, it's not clear that they're going to be getting much more anyway, but that's the new arrangement. And this is a huge source of revenue anyway for Indonesia. And the security contract is huge. But what I was just about to say before, in 2002 or around then, there was a high-profile killing where a couple of Americans were shot in one of these attacks on a convoy heading up to the mine. And as a result of it, there was a big FBI investigation because it looked like the military had set up a Papuan, a local Papuan guy to do the killing. And I think the Bush administration at the time withheld military aid or a component of its quite significant military partnership with the Indonesian Defense Forces until, you know, pending the result of this probe. It was a fairly serious thing at the time.
In terms of there's a couple of quick questions. One is, was this definitely an attack on the mining employees, or were they caught in the crossfire of something?
Well, it's not clear yet. This happened at the office of Freeport down in the town, so not right up at the mine, but it does look like a small group of people with arms had busted into the premises of Freeport in Timika and gone towards where a group of employees were. There's not a lot of other detail at this stage, but unfortunately, Graham Wall, who a New Zealander, I think he hailed from Narrawahia, he'd been working with the company for the past 15 years as a technical expert. I think he may have generally been otherwise based back in Australia between times, working up in Papua at this mine. But he was caught up in this attack, and as I said, two other people who are Indonesians are in a serious condition in a local hospital.
And has Freeport shut the mine down?
No. They've told me that the mine operations continue. I guess there's so much riding on it at this time. You know, there's maybe a need for business as usual in a way, but they just said that their office is down in Timika, where this attack took place. So this is about 60 or 70 kilometres away from the mine. Those offices have been closed and the employees there evacuated for now. But it's interesting because the Freeport spokesman told me that, you know, since the COVID-19 outbreak, they've put in these strict protocols around physical distancing and hygiene measures, as well as travel restrictions to minimize the risk of infections. But they want to maintain their production up at the mine.
Johnny, thank you very much for joining us. All the best for your bubble tonight.
Okay, Brian. Yeah, kia ora. Thank you.
Kia ora, Johnny. That's Johnny Blaze from the RNZ Pacific News crew. We'll have one of his colleagues, or maybe Johnny himself, back for another Pacific chat at about 8:15 tomorrow on RNZ National Night.